And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
Hi, I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
All right, James, something absurd is happening today.
I know. What is it?
I'm not sure. It feels like every day for the last 16 months has been absurd. But with that in mind, we are going to be looking at Starfinder's latest new adventure product. It's called Tales from the Vast.
It's I feel like we've been in the market for something like this and just finally have it come to fruition.
Yeah, you know, I worked with Paizo on Claws of the Tyrant, which is like a multiple part adventure path for Pathfinder second edition, and this honestly reminds me a bit of that. It's a little bit different. There's more adventures in this one, and I think that's a good thing, but I'm really excited to take a look at it because this book is wild.
It is such a dense book, and we unfortunately did not get it very much before this podcast, so we are doing a definite first look. I feel like maybe I've had a little bit more time to look at it, but it is still a very surface level examination of what is in here. And also, we do have to give the caveat, this is an adventure first look, so there's a lot of stuff that is really cool that we cannot talk about without ruining potential spoilers for it.
Yeah, we're going to be very vague in this one, and as a result, this episode might be a little bit shorter than what we would typically do when we're doing a review book, because we're not going to sit and talk filler, and we're not going to spoil the stories inside for you, because we want you guys to pick up the book and check it out. So we're going to try to get you hooked and interested on why this is a very cool adventure book. I don't know how you feel about it, James. I like this one a little bit better than Murders in Metal City.
I feel like they're fun. I feel like this is Murder in Metal City times 4.5.
That's fair.
It is more varied adventures. I think they're deeper a little bit. I feel like Murder in Metal City had a lot, but a lot of that was stuff that was really geared towards newbies and role-playing players. And not necessarily mechanical players, where some of these adventures, even at low levels, are actually pretty complicated. This is actually not a beginner level book, which is nice.
Yes. And also, this book doesn't look like any Paizo book I've ever seen before, and I love that.
Oh, I mean, the art on it is so trippy and great. I mean, I'm going to show just a little bit of it. I have to be careful to not spoil stuff. So,
but can you show the art on page? It's like the third page, where it's just like a cutout of a bunch of different art from the book in like a collage.
Yep, that's exactly where I went to, because it's unique.
It's like this all art is in Paizo style, but you can even look at like the page borders for this one, where they're like this really trippy, gosh, I don't even know what you would call the style. It almost reminds me of like a mix between like the 90s graffiti, like grunge aesthetic, but like in like rainbow punk vibes. It's really cool.
It reminds me if you took like Buck Rogers 1930s pulp and mixed it with 1970s Freedom Flower Love aesthetic.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's really cool. And the page border for this book is really appropriate, because I would say that like 3 out of the 4 adventures that we get in this take place in some really wild, far out places. Would you agree with that, James?
I would say they're all they're all from the Vast. Two of the places we've been directly before.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Right. So let's give a brief overview of like the adventure summaries. The book starts with like, welcome to Tales from the Vast. And it tells you like a bit about what ancestries would be good to play, and like some general vibe information for like what kind of characters you might want to build for it. It's very short. It doesn't go into a whole lot of depth because these 4 adventures are very different, but there's a brief like one sentence summary for each. So the first adventure we get is called Expedition to the Drowned Planet. It's for levels 1 to 3. And given the rare chance to map a world in Kazmurg's absurdity, the heroes attempt to learn the secrets of a planet's mythical past. If they survive the demonic, and that's day, D-A-E-M, waterlogged perils of Omnil, right?
So you're getting daemons. That's interesting in itself. Also, there's like Expedition 33. It's this. I feel like this title is also a play on Sears of the Drowned City, which was
kinda, yeah,
which was a module done by Nick Wasco a long time ago. God, I say that like it wasn't actually, it was a decade ago. Never mind, it is old.
And then you also, and the other thing to note about that one is that it takes place in a region of the galaxy called Kazmerg's Absurdity, which is a place where magic has broken like physics to the point where like modern navigational equipment doesn't work. So the only way to navigate the area is with like old fashioned maps, like you are a sailor on an ocean.
Yep, you're just dead reckoning through space.
Yeah, and so like it's already, we're talking about some weird stuff in that first one. Now, James, do you want to read the second summary, or you want me to grab this one?
I got it. The second one is called Moonside 250 Terror. It goes over, while traveling through the drift, the heroes stop at a haunted way station inhabited by a delusional ghost and terrorized castaways from all over the galaxy. Will they escape or be trapped?
Hooray. I mean, so the drift is not as absurd as the absurdity, of course, but you're talking about this extra realital space where like every time you access it, parts of the outer planes collapse in and there's just weird stuff all over the place. It kind of fits the weird science vibe that this adventure has, I would say.
I think it does more than that. In reading through it, this I think is my favorite of the four.
Yeah. So my favorite of the four is the next one. It's called Paradise Shutdown, levels 7 to 5. And the blurb text in the front page of this book is, the heroes visit the false moon of Salvation's End to investigate a seemingly idyllic vault with a disturbing secret. Do you doom this paradise or save it?
Also a reference to Paradise Lost, I'm guessing.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Salvation's End is a place that anybody who played First Edition Starfinder Society is going to be very familiar with. It is like this artificial moon where all of these weird vaults and tests exist, and we go to one of them in this one. So great. There's even some follow-up for some of the older Starfinder First Edition scenarios. It's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And the last one we have is Sahedron Showdown. The heroes battle invading Imperial forces to protect Ezelran, a distant ally of the Pact Worlds. We've been to Ezelran before. That's the planet where Ezelgoons are from. And we've also done that for other stuff, like the Jinsouls. So,
yeah.
Sounds simple, but I think is also a very strong adventure. These are bracketed in levels. So, like, the first one is 1 to 3, the second one's 3 to 5, third one is 5 to 7, last one's 7 to 9. You could probably get away with moving their levels a little bit, like 1 to 3, mm-hmm. 4 to 6, you know, just because it's... You might not get a lot of time in a certain level if you follow it to the letter of when people level up. And you want to experience the new fun within the end of a story, right? Like, you want to power up for that story.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that completely. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about this book is I feel like when we were told about Starfinder books, we were told that every Starfinder book was going to have like a new ancestry and there was going to be player contents in most of the books. I skimmed through looking pretty hard to find out if there was any. There is, am I wrong, James? There's no new player facing content in this book. There's no like GM toolbox section. There's no ancestry in this, like there was in Guilt of the Grave World. I didn't see anything.
I have to double check. I think there is an ancestry.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. I think it's from one of the creatures from the first adventure. I'm just double checking to see if it is or where it is.
Oh.
So just let me follow up to that.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I didn't see one when I looked through. So, I mean, if I'm wrong and there is one, that's pretty great. If I'm right, I also think that's kind of okay because... Like, if you just want to pick up a book and play a game, then it's nice to be able to know, like, oh, wow, this book, I only need it to run my adventures. And if you don't need it, then it's like, or you don't need the adventures, it's like, okay, you don't have to pick up an adventure book you won't use for content.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking through, it looks like they aren't in there, but they reference other stuff from a different book.
Yeah, I know... I know those weird guys that like kind of like the long spindly fingers with the creepy bug eyes and the little antenna for heads, mm-hmm. the ones that got introduced in Galaxy and Galactic Ancestries. I know that they have an adventure in this book. There's actually a pretty good range of non-human alien ancestries referenced throughout this adventure from what I've seen. So that for me is one of the pluses.
Yeah, there's dwarves in this.
Yo, yeah, there's dwarves, there's kolos. For those of you who haven't been following along, kolos are like the new-ish term for gnolls in the game. I saw Vlaka, I saw Skittermanders, yeah, Sheeran. Riforians. You said Ezelgoons were in this one too, in the last one, right?
Mm-hmm. Also, Astrozoans.
Yeah. So if you like Starfinder's different aliens on display, just like people being people, this is a great book for that. It feels like they were like, yo, let's just do a bunch of weird things.
Yeah. And there's a couple variants on them that I didn't think of as possible, but especially when you get to some of the more, what do you call those, thriller and horror themed adventures, stuff gets really creepy, which is cool.
Yeah. I think that's what's another thing that's really interesting about this book. All of them exist in this kind of like weird 1970s sci-fi adventure type of space, like you were talking about, James. But also at the same time, they all have very clearly different like story vibes to them. Like, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, the Moonside Terror is very distinctly a horror adventure, where like Sahedron Shutdown is a bit more like military action, you know, protect the people kind of thing. And the funniest one for me is Paradise Shutdown. It's my favorite in this book, and I'll tell you what this is when we get to that adventure. We start going over each of them briefly, but I think before we get to that, we should start with Expedition to the Drowned Planet. Now, James, did you have any favorite adventures out of the four? Because I think we should divide these up to talk about them, and I don't want to take one of your favorites.
Oh, I mean, mine would be 2, 4, 3, 1, in that order.
2, 4, 3, 1. That's all right. So my favorite by far is Paradise Shutdown. So I'll take Paradise Shutdown. That's the third one at the level 5 to 7 bracket. If yours favorites were 2 and 4, why don't you do Moonside Terror and Sahedron Showdown, and I'll do Expedition to the Drowned Planet and Paradise Shutdown, and then we got everything good. Bada bing, all rock and roll. Bada bing, bada boom. All right. So sorry, everybody who wanted to hear James, you get me first. And we're going to talk about Expedition to the Drowned Planet. Now, all of these adventures start with a very similar opening page, where you get one page that gives you a list of all the different, quote, chapters, unquote, in each adventure, and a couple sentences describing the general events that happens in each. There's also a section of adventure background matter that kind of sets the stage and tells the GM, like, what's going on as, like, a big overview. And there's also a sidebar for most of them that have a GM adventure hooks sidebar, which is, like, how do you get the players into this adventure. Now, for this one, for this particular one that we're talking about, which involves Karzug's absurdity, I'm just going to call it to the absurdity from here on out. And for this one, it gives you a couple of different ideas for, like, hey, why might you be going to the absurdity to do this adventure? So, like, you can be academics and students participating in a field study, which is hilarious. You could be Starfinder agents chasing a lead about a certain empire. You can be market management team for a new Abadar Corp facility. There's like a whole list. It's good. And you're free to do your own, but if you need that help, it's there. Now, without spoiling this adventure too much, the basic idea is that you have a sponsor that you want to go and like to the absurdity for. And like I mentioned, there's a lot of like demonic activity, and the adventure explains why there are demons present in the absurdity.
Daemons,
not demons. The formerly neutral evil ones, the denizens of Abaddon, that are all manifestations of terrible ways to die. Daemons, you're correct. Thank you, James. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So as we look through like this adventure, you kind of start off on this really funny, it reminds me of the Planet Express. I love
it totally does, especially the ship. And also, if you ever see the Hitchhiker's Guide movie or read the books,
yeah,
Yeah, the crew is very much feels inspired by the crew of the Hitchhiker's Guide ship. I forget what that
was. Yeah. It's very funny. The whole it's a very colorful cast of characters. You have like Art of an Astrozoan, who is like your captain, and it talks like the sections on like landing for the different areas. I'd say the first couple bits of this are actually just some really nice role-playing sections. And I think one of my favorite parts about this adventure is because the absurdity is a place that traditional like drift navigation doesn't work. You have to have these like maps, and the maps are unhinged. James, maybe we don't show them the map, but like all I'll say is that if you're an adventurer, the map is unhinged that you'll be handed. It's great. I love it. Every second it could be unhinged is really good.
Yeah. So there's a lot of custom maps in this book.
Yeah. I will also say that like the first adventure is very exploration-y. So this is an adventure that you should consider running if you like exploration, if you like going to new places and seeing different types of creatures. You're trying to find like interesting, again, without trying to give you too many spoilers, you're trying to find interesting things in a place that nobody has explored before. A lot of the creatures you'll encounter, they are aliens. There's not a whole lot of sentient things you're fighting here, and it's just really cool and interesting until eventually you meet like people native to the absurdity, and I feel like they live up to their name. If you read through Galactic Ancestries and you read about which ancestries might have a stakes in the absurdity, you can probably figure out who you'll find here. All the art for this ancestry is amazing. I went from not being like very like about them when we did our Galactic Ancestry review to being like, oh, this is funny. There's like an art of like this particular alien, like with these big bug glasses and this ridiculous mustache. And I'm like, all right, bestie, thank you. You're great. Overall, I think that this is a very first level Starfinder adventure. Would you agree with that, James?
I think so. But there's also art of one of them with a chainsaw, and that's cool. And there's a unique daemon that shows up in this AP or this.
Yeah. James and I like unique content, so this is a plus for us.
Yeah. The less I appreciate returning things, especially legacy things, but to see new things in that space is good as well. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, definitely. So I would say that for this adventure, consider running it if you like adventures, if you like. That's, I would say, like James and I said, it's got a very like Planet Express. It's got a very like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It kind of reminds me of, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name of the movie. It's that movie with the family and the boy and the robot get separated and are on like an alien planet, and the family has to find him, but they think he's dead, and like I can't remember what it's called. Lost in Space.
I was thinking Danger Will Robinson, and I couldn't.
That's the line from the robot. It's very Lost in Space vibes without like anybody being lost, if that makes sense. Like it's just like we're exploring the unknown, and there are beings from hell here. Enjoy.
Abaddon.
True.
Hell's later, sort of, maybe.
Right. You know what else is later, sort of? Mm-hmm. That horrible monster that's on the front cover page of the adventure you're covering now.
Moonside 250. Let me just give a little peeky there. This Moonside 250 is, I think the initial impulse is to go with Five Nights at Freddy's, but I think it's a bigger exploration of that. So you go to a service station. Think like Bucky's, if it was an Omega Mart. And Omega Mart is like a art exhibit supermarket that's out in Nevada, I think. That is like if Rick and Morty made a supermarket sort of thing, where it's absurdist, nothing's real. And then you also just dip that in a bit of Poppy playtime.
Do you know what I was gonna say? This reminds me of
what?
Do you remember the movie Wally's Wonderland?
No.
Oh my gosh. Wally's Wonderland is this unhinged horror movie, but it's not really horror because Nicolas Cage is like the main character.
Oh, I understand. He's
and so like what happens is that like Nicolas Cage is basically the main character of Five Nights at Freddy's, where he gets hired to do the overnight shift at this broken down pizza place where the animatronics come to life and kill everybody. And like a bunch of teenagers try to warn him that that their parents are essentially trying to get him killed in this place. And they get themselves locked in with him as a result. Mm-hmm. And basically what happens is like Nicolas Cage's job is that in order to pay for his car to get like fixed so that he can leave, he has to work the overnight shift. And they tell him that he's allowed like 4 15-minute breaks throughout the night, and they give him a fridge of soda. So what happens is Nicolas Cage looks like he's like this hapless, like he's actually completely silent in the movie, and that's what makes it so funny. Mm-hmm. He does not say anything at all. And so what happens is he's going through when he's cleaning this house and or this restaurant, and the monsters will come out and they'll start chasing the kids, and a couple of them even die. Mm-hmm. And it'll cut to Nicolas Cage and he's like on his break drinking the soda, and then like the kids are about to get killed and they're going, ah! And then the bell rings and Nicolas Cage comes out and just takes like his shotgun or whatever, and he just kills all the animatronic that's trying to kill the kids. It's mm-hmm. it's so funny. Mm-hmm. And this reminds me of that, to bring this full center so everybody can hear how my ADHD addled brain works, is essentially you are player characters that are locked in with this monster, but the monster doesn't realize that you're player characters. So mm-hmm. it doesn't realize how bad of a time it's gonna have in this adventure.
On the contrary, this is the first adventure that I see that gives rules for wandering monsters.
Ah, okay, yeah, that's true.
And lets you know that there's things that wandering that you might want to avoid.
Hmm.
Also, the first one that has a content warning about a bunch of stuff that I'm not gonna go over because some of that is us there. I will say radiation sickness, and that one's just funny. You can have that. That's free. There's a lot of maps that look like smaller maps that are put together, and that is fine. They are great settings for this ostensibly fun truck stop, Bucky's with a play place. Mm-hmm. Once again, no reason this building should be like this, but it's funny. And you go through and you find that there's still people here, and how are people getting along in this situation? So it actually is a bit more than just a monster flick in going through, but there's a lot of supernatural, and the first bit of it is actually a fair bit of social encounters and figuring out what the setting is. So you get to the end and there's a lot of resolutions to it. It ends up being actually pretty open-ended, which is not what I expected when I read it from the start. Because there's a similar scenario, I forget the name of it, in Starfinder Society, where there's an ooze, it's like an ooze golem, and you're just running from it in the facility for the society scenario. And this mm-hmm. is like a refinement of that scenario, and I thought that scenario was pretty good. In addition to many other things, this has a lot in it. This could be in similar length to the Shadow Adventure Path for Starfinder. It could be similar in length to that if they wanted to. There's a lot of meat on these bones. What is that? Signal of Screams. It could be similar to Signal of Screams in length. So I really enjoy this one. You get a lot of unique maps, which some people don't like, some people do. But they're not hard to draw maps. They're not like weird butterflies or anything like that. They're maps that you can get through. If you have tiles, you can tile them out. And your encounter design is going to be pretty varied as well. You have things like incorporeal things to worry about, and that's some rules you're going to have to learn. In addition to some other stuff that I don't know how to run, because I cannot wait to run this one for my players.
Yeah, I think this adventure looks fascinating. And I think my favorite part about it is that it manages to grab a whole bunch of different horror vibes and mush them together in a way that feels really fun and also makes a lot of sense. Like one of the areas that, if you're a player, you probably won't see this, but one of the areas is named after a very famous line from a very famous like alien horror short story. Mm-hmm. That one is on page 68 if you want to look, James, but don't show them, that we don't want to spoil it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like this one. I think this is a strong contender for one of the most fun adventures in the set.
Yeah, especially if you have players with a little bit of a dark tint to them, that like kind of weird adventures or maybe a little bit of gross out adventures. This is great. Also, some of the art is just so good, and some of it is spoilers, which is a shame because I think one of the best pieces is a direct spoiler to the conclusion of it. But it is so good.
Is it Jabba the Hutt? Is that one?
No, it's the one on 76. It's the
one. Okay, that one is really good. Okay, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, okay. Do you know which art I was talking about when I said Jabba the Hutt?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Sweet. Yeah. James and I are just gonna, I guess we'll just like be like that and make offbeat references that won't make sense until you do it. I enjoy that. Okay. So the next adventure number 3 of 4, is called Paradise Shutdown. And I have a question for you, James. Mm-hmm. Would you be interested in playing an adventure where the AI that makes up terrible scenarios to test in Salvation's End just wanted to play a game of Stardew Valley?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. That's the adventure pitch for Paradise Shutdown. I love this adventure. This is wacky and wild. James, will you show the front page for this adventure? Because this is one of my favorite arts of the book. I love the expression on whatever these hamster things are. That's great.
Sure. Give me 1 second to bring it up here. It is pretty animated.
Oh, I love it. It's so good. It's so good. Like, one of the things I'll say about this book is I almost wish that all the art was done in like the page border style, because like there's that cool monster in the top right corner of all the right hand side, and it's like it's really like cartoony rather than being like painterly like Paizo typically does their art. And this spread page for Paradise Shutdown is the closest this book gets to that, with these wacky whatever these hamster things are, and I love them. Like, yeah. They're the best. They're just actively wonderful.
That Margin monster looks like a doodle. I love it.
Yeah, no, he's great. He's great. It looks like Eddie from Stranger Things just decided to freehand draw a weird alien in the corner of his favorite role-playing game book. I love this book's art. It's so good. So if we're talking about Paradise Shutdown, one of the things that's interesting to me about this adventure is that in terms of the number of chapters, I believe this is the shortest in terms of its chapters. This only has 3 chapters compared to the first one, Expedition to the Drowned Planet has like 5. And Moonsight Terror also has 3. So maybe it's not the smallest, but that was one of the things that like jumped out to me right away, was that Paradise Shutdown only had 3 parts, but it has 3 acts for what you're doing in the adventure. So if you don't know anything about Salvation's End and you're a relatively new player, this adventure does its best to get you up to speed on what Salvation's End is. The adventure background gives you a lot of information, and you start the adventure getting to talk to Kunaris Vex, who is a elf operative who is the venture captain of the Salvation's End Starfinder Society Lodge. And Kuronis will literally tell you the summary of basically every adventure that has happened in Salvation's End. It won't go through all the details. Like, it's not, I wouldn't say that the information you get is a spoiler, but this adventure very solidly happens after all the previous ones. So I really enjoy that this plays so hard with canon. And if you're a Starfinder agent with Starfinder Society lore, there are a couple places in the entry where you get some extra knowledge and tidbits thrown at you for the things that you would know. And there's even I wouldn't call it a traditional Starfinder Society mission briefing opening, but it is written like a Starfinder Society opening. So like, to me, this feels like it almost feels like a 3-part Starfinder Society adventure in one book. Would you say that's accurate, James?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's complete with reputation.
Yeah. It's cool. There's like reputation. There's like different things you're doing. So like, one of the interesting parts about this is that when you do a Salvation's End mission, where you enter the testing area varies. And in this one, you are relatively far away from where most of the adventure happens. So there's a lot of actually just trying to get to where you need to go. And one of my favorite parts about that is that it plays with this very much this like Stardew Valley vibe by essentially like giving you special actions for like foraging and fishing for food. And it very much feels like the little guy thrown over and reeling his thing in. There's a lot of NPCs. All of them have very detailed NPC stat blocks, and The rules don't really talk about romancing them, but they're written with enough specifications that it feels like if you wanted to go full ham on Stardew Valley, you could. There's this really adorable picture of a Sheeran couple in the town, like wearing like not quite traditional farmer's clothing, but like modern traditional farmer's clothing. And it's just really, the vibes in this adventures are very fun. And then things get bad, like they always do in Salvation Set.
And then the bad stuff happens.
Yeah. And I'm not going to tell you what the bad things are, because that is a major spoiler. But this adventure is really amusing because of the situation it sets up. And it's not a good situation. But I will say that at the very least, you'll get to participate in some good old-fashioned rural farm community fun along the way. And ultimately, isn't that what we're all trying to do with our Starfinder Society characters? Just enjoy a good festival where nothing could possibly go wrong.
Yeah, and farming. I love farming.
Yeah. Farming is great, man. Yeah.
Also, this adventure has two pieces of art with things with chainsaws.
Yo, chainsaws! I really appreciate that all of the NPCs in this scenario are very different. Like, you know how when you go and you play a game like Stardew Valley, like they kind of go out of their way to make each character as different as possible from the others, and mm-hmm. the ones that are married are kind of just one character instead of being separate characters.
yeah, true.
Yeah. So like literally for like the married couple, they have a single stat block where they are named this person and this person. Yep. And it's so funny.
Joined at the hip.
Yeah. And gosh, so I mentioned they're Sheeran already, right? Mm-hmm. My favorite part about this is that Salvation's End doesn't really understand people. So like a Sheeran, like in order to like have a full family and produce like Sheeran larvae, essentially, you actually need three Sheeran. And, but that doesn't matter to Salvation's
End. It just does the best it thinks it is. It's like, yeah, whatever, right? It's close enough.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I think my favorite NPC is there's an NPC who he is an SRO that looks like a clockwork golem made out of fancy teacup porcelain, including a top hat that is a teacup saucer and cup on top. And it's the best. Yep. He is the best. Objectively, he is the best NPC. There's a Skittermander. Yeah, there's a Skittermander. The Skittermander's great. There's a Tengu, like, oh wow, this is the first time a Tengu has been in a Starfinder adventure, period, as far as I'm aware. Like, there's lots of great people, but none of them are a porcelain SRO with a teacup for a hat.
Yeah, that's a very unique piece of art.
Yeah, no, it's so good. It's so good. I think that if you like idyllic small towns where everything goes bad very quickly, you will like this adventure. If you are a fan of any of the writing for Salvation's End, you'll like this adventure a lot. And if you like lots of cute little guys, also very good. I am a big fan of this adventure. My favorite part is they stuck a Volcarisu in here, which is great. I'm a fan of that. As the person who wrote those, two thumbs up. It's like a kid. It's adorable. I love this art. I wish it wasn't on the start to chapter 3 where there's tons of spoilers, or I would show you the art of this little Volcarisu child, and it's perfect.
Yeah. 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 I do like that. I said the first adventure was complicated and not for new people, but they do meet out the complexity of systems. Like the reputation system is actually shown in the second adventure and really does a lot more in the third adventure.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit and then you get more. Like in the fourth adventure, you get more spaceship stuff, but you get some of that in the first. You get a little taste in the first one and then you get more of it in the fourth. So they still do build in complexity, even though they are kind of complex to start, they build on it. So you're not like overwhelmed by everything from the get-go.
But James, there's a fourth adventure. Could you possibly tell me more about the fourth adventure?
Yeah, Sahedron Showdown, of course, of course. I'm going to show the cover because that's not a spoiler at all. This is good art. I just love it. It's so idyllic and so nice. You know, I wish I was that happy while in mortal peril. So you are going to help on the planet of Ezelran, where Ezel goons are from. And stuff bad happens as soon as you get there. And you end up stuck in between a struggle between the Aslanti Star Empire and other people.
Yo, but question.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the Izzelgoon planet was essentially Candyland? Because that looks like Candyland to
it
me
does.
In that full art.
It does. Or you ever see Meet the Pyro from the Team Fortress?
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like a world that like the Pyro would be seeing as they're burning people to death.
Yeah.
So you meet a bunch of friendly people, bad stuff happens, and it's I like it because it's ambitious. This also could be a longer adventure, but they pared it down a little bit, and you could, there's very clear bones on where you could expand from it, but it is a kind of what is that, the Wolverines, what movie was that Wolverines in? Oh, with the Resistance and Cuba. I feel like, oh, we watched different movies as a kid.
Yeah, we definitely
Red did. Dawn. No Red idea. Dawn.
Oh, okay, Red Dawn. Okay,
yeah,
I've heard of Red Dawn.
Yeah, it's definitely like has a Star Wars meets Red Dawn kind of feel, because you're not kids probably, but you are people that are not prepared to do all this, suddenly thrust into this, and it is also just more than that. There's a lot of mechanics for things like traps and other stuff, so you get a lot out of your characters. Hopefully you've built them that whole way, or you could switch them out between adventures, because there's not really a penalty because there's no through line, but this one is definitely the more combat, most combat heavy, I would say, of all of them. And a fair amount of ally gathering, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think that's pretty fun, actually. Also, they weren't cowards and they gave us big maps. I really appreciate the big maps.
Nothing makes James more upset than a single square that's supposed to be a 10-foot square.
Oh, they ruin me, man. They ruin me. I'm trying to make sure that there's no super spoilers here. Just this map with its impossibly tiny boxes. I love it. I will deal with it. Just give me the impossibly tiny boxes. I love this. I don't need 10-foot squares. So it also lets you fight at ranges and do things at ranges that you actually have range for, because Starfighter is a ranged game, despite all my efforts to make it a melee game. So making sure that you have those big battlefields, and these are the biggest maps in the especially with lines of sight in the book, and you get a lot of that, and there's a fair amount of unique content on this. I think you might have seen variants of other things in previous books, but there is still enough, I feel, novel Aslanti Star Empire content to be interesting, as well as the NPCs, and just, you've seen a lot of things in this book already.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be fun to revisit those areas and those people.
I love how extra for their goddess and their culture the Aslanti are.
Oh, it is so good. You really get that feeling of, I am doing stuff and I'm building up, and this thing that I'm fighting is actually important, scary, big, and not just the final domino to knock over.
Yes.
It has a very good conclusion with a very interesting final act there. And yes. There's a couple different ways that it ends too. So a couple of them, a couple of these have, like, I don't want to say alternate endings, but different outcomes for different parts of people. I believe this one has one, the Outpost 250 has a couple. I think Outpost 250 ending is going to be one that, when people play it, is that they are going to all have different stories about how that ended.
Mm.
And I think that's going to be really fun to go through.
Numbat in chat asks, is that map the real reason why they won't make a foundry model for this? I didn't know that they weren't making a foundry model. I don't know what the answer is, but I feel like foundry can handle big maps, though. Yeah,
I don't know the economics behind it.
Seriously.
So that's all four adventures.
Yeah. So James, you said that your favorite was Moonside Terror, then second place was Seahedron Showdown, right?
Yep.
I think Paradise Shutdown is my number one because I love the ridiculousness, but mm-hmm. I think Moonside Terror is my number two.
Yeah, I think that one is. That one just scratches the itch for stuff that I like to run and play in.
Yeah,
like it is not fair to the other ones that I think are also written very well that this one is directly linked into the dopamine centers of my brain. Like, that's, this is not fair.
Yeah, so for me the reason why I love Paradise Shutdown so much is like seeing someone take a genre that I enjoy and like give me mechanics to make it work, that's always going to be a thing that appeals to me. Like, you want to sell me on the fact that I'm in a Harvest Moon by giving me a fishing mechanic? Sir, you've got me. You found the dopamine centers of my brain and you just started spamming that button.
Yeah, and you want people living through trauma? Give me that. Give me that. Because even if you save the world, there's still a tomorrow. Sorry, I've been listening to a lot of Guilty Gear songs.
Ah, that's good.
James theme came out, and it's great. I love James theme.
So what I find is really interesting in this book, reminds me, like, I think it doesn't map up perfectly to the level range of Guilt of the Grave World, but it's fairly close to it. And I also think another thing that's interesting about Tales from the Vast is it really does remind me of, like, that sort of, like, anthology series. Like, here's a couple of stories. Like, and this one is better than a lot of anthologies I've seen because, like, in Claws of the Tyrant, the adventure that I was part of, like, that one, everything is themed around a storyline, but the storyline is for the villains, not the players, and you have different player characters in each adventure. This one, like, there's, like, no connection. This is like picking up a 90s short story, like, booklet and just reading a bunch of random stories that have nothing to do with each other except for, like, a general vibes.
Yeah, being in the same universe. And, you know, there's hooks for you to be able to do all these things, but it really is... hooks come as they may. And I'm going to do things that I know my players like to hook up between them, but you really could just run them separate.
Now, James, do you think you prefer an adventure book like this, or do you prefer something more like a traditional adventure path? Like, what to you is the better play feel?
So I think for me at this point, I think the anthology style is preferable, just because I have limited time now. I have a small child. My opportunities to run are limited. So to be able to focus on smaller parts that I can more easily time and sub people out with and in with, it's just more to my lore. But I mean, I do like longer volumes of things. I would hope to eventually see, like, you know, those three volume paths. I like those three volume paths. Like, higher level three volume paths are kind of, I think, in my mind, my preferred.
I feel like Paizo is really moving towards those. I think that one of the things that the three volume path does really well is it adheres to a traditional storytelling structure of three act storytelling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that because, like, a lot of times you'll do an adventure path and you'll have entire books that kind of feel like filler. Like, I remember running Strange Aeons for our crew. And I felt like I really liked book three, where you were sailing down the river and doing, like, Dreamlands adventures. But to me, that also, most of that book was kind of fillery.
Yeah.
Like, they gave you a reason for why you had to do it to progress the adventure, but it was kind of fillery. They just wanted a travel adventure where you were traveling.
Yeah. Like, I see the narrative point to them, but, like, that book, the content in that is going to take me months to complete.
Absolutely, yeah.
I want to complete a story, preferably in my lifetime.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth? Well, I think I don't have any other thoughts on this book. I think this is a great book. I highly recommend it. I think it's my favorite adventure thing I've seen from Paizo so far for Starfinder Second Edition, at least in terms of, like, this style of hardcover adventure book. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. It drew me in more than the other modules. The other modules were cool, but this had a little bit more for me. But that's to be expected. There's just more in it.
I just think this book has so much more style and riz. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, like, there is, for me at least, diminishing returns on depth in NPCs.
Yeah,
because there's gonna be a point where I forget and we just start winging things, and that's what me and my players like to do. So when I get, like, 18 pages of backstory, my brain ain't that good no more. It don't think so good like that no more.
I think your brain thinks pretty good, but you have a lot of other things that the brain needs storage space for, and it can't handle 18 pages of NPC anymore.
Yeah. So I'm just, otherwise I'm just gonna start making them Southern and making them weird hobbies and professions.
So, you know, it won't be consistent either. It'll change from adventure to adventure based on what's funny.
Exactly. So just the fact that these are a little more focused on the specific adventures and NPCs is just preferable for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. If I had to rank the current adventures that are out in this form, I think this is probably my favorite of them. I would say Guilt of the Grave World is my second. And I think Murders at Metal City is fine, but it's like a 30-page entire splat book for one adventure. And that one is intimidating, which is funny because that's the one for like new players. But like I think that's a nice short little story in a book, like a quarter of this book is pretty fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad it finally came out. I've been waiting for this one for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think our next book that we're looking forward to is probably the Absalom Station book at Gen Con, right? Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
I almost want to check now. I don't think that there's anything else that's been announced besides Tech Core, and we know that Tech Core got pushed backwards, I believe, right? Let's see. I'm looking Explore More Adventures. Wow, it would be really nice if there was like a thing on the Paizo thing where I could just click a button and it told me like release date things are coming out.
It would be nice if when I looked for pre-generated characters, I didn't have to go to the Starfinder Society of Atlanta to find the pre-gens.
I see that on their new site on the thing. Like, there's a button for pre-gen characters, but I don't see one that just... This says Explore More Adventures. It tells me, like, the newest one, which I guess I can look up there. I see Tales of the Vast, Anthology. The Warframe book came out already, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's been out.
And also the accompanying video game mod for it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of playtests. So it looks like the next thing that's coming out is called Secrets of the Swarm. It looks like it's been announced on their site. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that one isn't coming out for a bit, though. So I think it's due in September. And then we just had the rule book come out. So the next rule book isn't even up on the thing yet. But we know that it's got to be the Gen Con release. Oh, here it is. It's Absalom Center of the Galaxy is what it's called. So that's our next book. We got some time between now and the next book. We can chill and maybe talk about some classes or something.
Yeah, we can hang out and dig in, do a little bit more digging into something instead of just trying to drink from the fire hose of content.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I've seen people who are like, Starfinder isn't coming out with enough content. I'm like, what are you talking about?
It's like, that just means they're not making what you want. And what do you want? Is it reasonable?
Yeah, seriously. And we don't even have time really to review like society stuff most of the time. We had Jessica on like a month or two ago, but like there's a lot of content out. Yeah, so
I got to play run one society scenario. I meant to run two, but I, real life.
Developer Dustin Knight in chat is weepily saying it's only been out for 8 months ...
I know, we have a lot for eight months.
We have a lot. It's good. So I think next time we will probably pick a class. If there's a class anybody listening wants to us to talk about first, feel free to pop into our Discord. Go to nodirectionpodcast.com, click the Discord link, join us on Discord, and then just put in the Starfinder second edition chat, I'd like to see this, and James and I will consider it. We are benevolent most of the time. We may pick it. We also may just do what we want. We've been prone to that too.
Yeah. I mean, look, I am fine with digging into classes. I can always forward the things we do on them to new players that I have, so they have references. So
yeah.
Either way, I get to eat from the trough that I make.
the trough? Are you saying we're slop?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Oh no. Well, I guess we got to improve our game a little bit for this class content so no one can accuse us of being slop. So until next time, de-slopify with no direction.